mine.
Yes, awesome. I give it to you because you're a member now.
Nice.
If you come three or more times, you automatically become a member. So I'm going to give you a cup here, and you're going to do a little preaching with these people.
Excellent. It's on. It's on today. I'm going to turn this fan away because it's going to blow everything off. And Steve mentioned something about pranksters. And I know last night he said that that he and I pulled a lot of pranks together. What the truth of the matter is that while Steve was pulling the pranks, I was in the dorm room on my knees meditating in prayer that God would save Steve and protect him from doing what he was doing. But it is great to be here and to represent Grace Bible College, Grand Rapids, Michigan. We're a little bit colder, have a little bit more snow than you do here. So I'm going home tomorrow morning anticipating that. But it is a joy to be with you this morning. And you know, whenever you go to a place and speak and you're not the church's pastor, and it's kind of hard to know what to speak about. I don't know any of you. I don't know your needs or wants. It's kind of like, you know, like the mosquito in the nudist camp. You know exactly what to do. You're just not sure where to start. And it just kind of, you know, reminded me of that kind of struggle. I'm able to be here with you for a half hour and then I'm gone. And Steve's left with the residue of trying to correct everything next week. But it is a joy to be here. When I have the privilege of speaking at youth camps or retreats, I always start off with three questions. The very first session, I have three questions. First one, why are you here? Second one, what walls or barriers do you need broken down? Third one, what do you need God to do? Not what you want God, but what do you need God to do? And I find myself putting those three questions up every single session of camp. And about the fifth or sixth session out of 10, the kids are starting to get it. They're starting to think about, well, why am I here? Some of them were there because they were forced to. Some of them are there because they had nothing else to do. Some of them are there because their parents wanted to have a party while they're at camp. Well, I have no idea, but the idea, why are you here? So I ask you those same three questions. Why are you here? What walls or barriers do you need broken down? And by the way, they don't have to be walls that are massive sin in our life. They could just be a wall of insecurity that doesn't allow you to share your faith with someone else. And what do you need God to do? None of us this morning are here by mistake. God has a reason. God has a purpose. You're not here by mistake. I don't know your life situation. You don't know mine. But we all share in one commonality. Life, as we know it, on earth, is painful. Can we not agree with that? Life, as we know it, here on earth, is painful. So the idea of sharing this morning is the reality that we can change the way we look at things. It's a matter of perspective. On the overhead, if you put that first slide up there, the title of the sermon is Not Who, But How. I usually put this on, I coach high school girls basketball. And I'm very quiet coach, in case you haven't figured it out yet. I don't ever yell, I don't ever move around, except for the kids on the bench when I really rip them, and they're all saying, well, coach, I'm not even playing, but you're yelling at me the most. I put the words on the board, not who, but how. I want them to see, you know, it's not who you're playing. I don't care how good they are or who they are. What matters is how you play yourself. I have a saying with my kids, you're never too tired to encourage your teammate. You're never too tired to encourage your fellow brother or sister. Not who, but how. Becomes the issue of perspective. Webster's Dictionary defines two things about perspective. The first one is a particular way of looking at something. Now, it's interesting as you think about a particular way of looking at something, that could get you into trouble. Especially in man-woman relationships. I mean, why can't women say what they really mean? I don't understand. For example, fine. Well, this is the word that women use to end an argument when they are right and you need to shut up. Or perspective, a particular way of looking at something. Oh, nothing. This is the calm before the storm. This means something, and you should be on your toes. Or what about go ahead? Don't do it, men. It's a dare. It is not permission. You are being deceived. Or, this is a good one, that's okay. You know, that's one of the most dangerous statements a woman can make to a man. What that really means is that she wants to think long and hard before deciding how and when you will pay for your mistake. Perspective. How we look and see things. When I went to Altoona, Pennsylvania in 1980, I was a young pastor coming out of Grace Bible College, thought I knew everything, as all us young guys do. And you find out rather quickly you know very little. And I had my daughter one time, I collected, my goal, I went there as a youth pastor, my goal was to try to bring Christian music into Christian young people's lives. Kids love music. I love music. When I was growing up, about the only Christian music I could find was Billy Graham or Melody Four Quartet. Didn't relate. And these kids, so I bought cassette tapes, and the church bought cassette tapes out of my youth budget. One particular day, I probably had 50, 60 cassettes in this box. It was sitting in the back of my car. One particular day, I get up in the morning, get my daughter, taking her to preschool. She's about three and a half years old. And I get in the car, and I forgot to lock the car the night before. My cassettes are gone. Now, I'm a pastor of a church in Altoona, and I was mad. And I was ranting and raving as we're driving in the car. I can't believe I didn't lock the car. I can't believe that somebody stole my Christian CDs. Well, they weren't CDs, cassettes. I can't believe that somebody took them. And I'm going on and on and on. And my daughter, Dan, don't be too upset. At least they get to hear about Jesus. And I'm like, You know, you have those moments where you kind of like just want to die, you know. And so I did what any parent would do under that situation. I grounded her for 3.5 years. But perception, right? Perspective. The way you choose to look at things. And the reality of it is, I choose how to look at life. I have that ability to choose how to look at life. There's a great passage of Scripture found in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13. You'll see it on the overhead here. Notice what it says. And remember, keep this in mind. Perspective, a particular way of looking at something. Not who, but how. No temptation has seized you except what is common to man. And God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted or tested above what you can bear. But when you are tempted, He will also provide a way out so that you can stand up under it. I love the King James where it says on the way out that it's a way of escape. Do you understand what that verse is saying? That verse is saying that absolutely nothing can happen to us in our life that God does not guarantee by His own faithful attribute to give us a way to deal with it. Nothing. You can think of the worst tragedy imaginable to humanity. And if it happens in your life, God says, I will give you a way to deal with it. But what's the problem? The problem is, the reality of it is, you can't use what you don't know. You can't use that fire escape if you don't know how. I had the privilege in Altoona with the youth ministry of taking kids into New York City. We combined with a church from Preakness, Passaic, New Jersey. It was a black inner city church. Okay, and we would go into inner city Harlem. I'm bringing white, 30, 40 white middle class kids from western Pennsylvania. The closest thing they've ever seen to slums is the parking lot of Kmart. And I'm bringing them into New York City. And so here we are walking down streets of Harlem. We look like a big Oreo cookie. You know, it's the funniest thing. And we came around this corner. Pastor Lindsay said, John, you see that building? There was a building. Obviously, it had burned. And he said, on the top floor, you see that floor, and you could see where the flames had broken the windows and the firemen had gone in. And there was a fire escape there. And he said, John, when the firemen got to that floor, they found 7 bodies. 3 mothers huddling around 4 children, 2 of them infants. The mother's obviously trying to protect their children from the flames, trying to provide a way of escape in their best way possible. And he said, John, the greatest tragedy was that the fire escape was working. They were feet away, but none of them knew how to use it. Isn't it sometimes our Christian life? Have you ever had those moments where you wonder, where is God? You ever had those moments where, why is this happening to me? And you begin to question and question and work it. But the idea here is that you can't know if you haven't practiced it. God will provide a way to deal with life, but you can't use what you don't know. In your Bibles, in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, there's a great passage of Scripture that talks about this, and I want to share it with you. I don't have it on the PowerPoint, but in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, it talks about this reality of God will always provide a way to deal with life, but you can't use what you don't know. Look at the Apostle Paul here when he describes our life. And by the way, it probably won't relate to any of you, but it relates to me real well. So he goes on in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, and he says, but we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that the all-surpassing power is from God, not from us. Now, this is a part you probably can't relate to. We are hard-pressed on every side, but not crushed. Perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not abandoned. Struck down, but not destroyed. We always carry around in our body the death of Christ, so that the life of Christ may be shown and seen in our lives. Interesting. Paul talks about this great struggle. You know what? The first praise chorus, I think I wrote that down. The first praise chorus we had talked about that idea of suffering and that idea of pain, the idea of where we were at in our Christian life. It came from that basis. Trading my sickness, trading my sorrows, for whose? Not who. But how? Later on in that chapter, Paul says this, therefore, verse 16, we don't lose heart. Though outwardly we're wasting away, inwardly we're renewed day by day. Now, this is, he says, for our light and momentary affliction. Any of you kind of wonder how light it really is? Or you wonder how momentary it really is? He says it's achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. Often I've heard this being preached with the concept that this eternal glory is when Christ comes and takes up his church and we're in heaven glorified as he is. That's not what it means. Oh, that's part of it. But what he is saying is right now, this very instant of time, you already have that eternal glory. You've been blessed with all spiritual blessings, Ephesians chapter 1. But do you know how to use your faith? Does your faith become an active instrument in facing life? Perspective. Well, go back to verse 11, and I want to share with you two things. Perspective of purpose. Why is this happening? Verse 11. For we who are alive are always being given over to death for Christ, so that his life may be revealed in our bodies. We don't have the time this morning, but I'll reference a couple passages. It says here that his life may be revealed, may be manifest, may be shown. It literally means put on a shelf for display. I've been staying with Steve and Debbie's at their house. If any of you have ever been to their house, Debbie is a phenomenal decorator, isn't she? But I'll tell you what, when you walk in the house, it's not like, ooh, I better not touch anything. It's like, whoa, you just feel this enveloping warmth. You know, this genuineness. And you look at these things that are on display and you appreciate their beauty, you appreciate their value, but more importantly, you appreciate what it gives you when you walk into that home. Warmth. Comfort. That's what this means. Our lives are put on display. People see us. We can't run out of time if you want to write a verse down, 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 2. Paul says to us, he says, you are our epistles. You are our books known and read by everybody. You display Christ. You know what the reality of that means today in the age of grace is that truly we are the only Christ the world sees today. Think about it. We are the only Christ the world sees today. Doesn't Paul say in Colossians 1, it is Christ in me, the what? Hope of glory. What does Peter say? Be ready to give an answer to every man who asks you what? The hope. We're on display, folks. And guess what? You don't have a choice. You don't have a choice. People are reading your lives. You kind of want to shut the book after the first page, don't you? Doesn't work. Doesn't work. They're reading you. They see you. Oh, today they're seeing the good side. Today they're seeing the spiritual side. You guys are giants in the spiritual life. But tomorrow, what do they read? What do they see? Perspective. Perspective of what's ahead. The reality of who we are. I have a story. We're not going to look at it. But I have a story up here. The way to find that perspective is David and Goliath. And go ahead and bring up all the other ones, and we'll go through them. In 1 Samuel chapter 17, you find the story of David and Goliath. Very powerful story. Young kid, big Goliath, facing the giant. David's a youth. Saul says, you can't go. He says, I wiped out a lion and a bear with my hands. And Saul said, oh, okay, go. We know that story. David goes and meets for Goliath. It's interesting, in Max Lucado's book, he says, no one else discusses God. David discusses no one else but God. And if you remember the story, when Saul finally says to him, go, he gives David what? He gives him his armor. And David tries them. And the word says, he tested them. He put them on. He tried them. But he told Saul, I can't use these because I don't know how they work. So what did he take? What did David use? Slingshot. Why did he use the slingshot? Because he knew how it works. He was an expert. He was a shepherd boy. Have you seen sheep? Sheep are stupid, aren't they? Michigan sheep, Colorado sheep, doesn't matter. Maybe the Colorado sheep have longer hair, doesn't matter. You know, they're all stupid. Here's David all day long. Sheep goes out of the fold, takes that slingshot, whack, hits the sheep, knocks them back in. Now they're all obeying. They're all smart. David's bored. He's a kid. Takes that slingshot, whack, knocks his sheep out, whack, brings them back in. He's doing it all day long. He's an expert. He knows how to use it. He knows. Do you know how to use your faith? I don't mean just talk it. I don't mean read it, but use it every day. That's the reality of where things are at. Well, then the perspective begins to change. Go to the next slide. And you see that God focus versus giant focus. You focus on giants, you stumble. Focus on God and your giants tumble. That's a great phrase, isn't it? Think about it. Isn't that what Paul says? Set your mind on things where? Above, not on things on earth. That doesn't mean ignore life. You can't. But the setting of your mind is a perspective, a determination of how I am going to face life. And it's our choice. Our choice. And it's our choice in how we know and live our faith. Well, then, what else does he say? Next slide, he talks about in 2 Corinthians 4:17. And in that verse there in 17, he says, for our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that outweighs us all. So, the second definition of perspective is the way things or events relate to each other in size or importance. The first definition was a particular way of looking at something. How do I get there? Not who, not the giants, but how do I get there? I get there by using and activating my faith. The second definition tells us that these events, the way these the events, how do they relate to each other? What's ahead? And Paul constantly tells us, focus on the person of Christ. Focus on the finished work of the cross. What has he done for us? 2 Corinthians 5:14. For Christ's love constrains, compels us. You know, Paul's not saying to us, look, it's how much you love Christ that should motivate you. That's impossible. What kind of motivation is that? Very subjective, isn't it? Because one day you don't feel like it. One day you don't want to. But he says it's the reality of facing that. He says the love of Christ, what he's done for us, that's what motivates us. Goes on, 1 John 4:10-19. This is love. Not that we love God, but that he loved us and sent his son. We love him because what? He first loved us. He first demonstrated his all compassion and caring spirit and soul. The reality of who Christ is and the perspective then changes. It changes now. The perspective changes to not how, but who. Yeah, we literally look at, how am I going to face life? I'm going to face life trusting that if I work out my salvation in fear and trembling, Philippians 2:12, that God will work in me. So I work out what God has worked in me. That's how I do it. But now it shifts. My perspective then says, who? Who empowers me? How does he do that? And it becomes the person of Jesus Christ. The reality of who he did and what he did. I grew up in a military base. I was born in Japan, raised, lived 16 different states. And on the military base, my parents would take us to the base nursery, dump us off in the nursery. And now the base nursery isn't your typical daycare of today, trust me. The base nursery was run by 18, 19-year-old teenage guys who couldn't care less what you did. Yes! And so we did everything and anything. Everything, and it was all legal because these guys were airmen, they wore a little stripe. Well, I remember one time particularly, my dad came in. I'm the oldest of six at this time. And my dad comes in, goes by my bunk, because at night you had to kind of lay down at 10 o'clock, but you didn't have to go to sleep because those other guys didn't care. So I'm laying in bed, and my dad comes by and shakes my foot. John, time to go. John, come on. So he goes get my brother Dan, takes him out to the car, comes back, shakes me. John, time to go. All the while I'm faking. At the very end of it, my dad comes, doesn't shake my foot. I'm the last of six. He picks me up, puts me on his shoulder, carries me out. By the way, I'm 13 years old. 6'2". My feet are dragging. But what did I want? I wanted the arms of my father to carry me. When my dad died in 1991, I was asked, obviously, I had to do the funeral. Very difficult. I remember the viewing in the funeral home. No one else was around, just myself in this empty tabernacle of my father. It was with my dad. I knew where he was. But I was looking at him, and I was trying to think, what kind of anecdotal story could I tell? And as I look at him, all of a sudden it just hit me, just like this. And I looked at that corpse, and I said, you knew. You knew, didn't you? And I chose to believe that my dad knew the whole time I was faking. But he still, what? Wanted to carry me, yeah. He still wanted to carry me. That is the Christian life. That is who, the object of our faith. That's what distinguishes Christianity from religion. Religion says, look at a lot of different ways to get to God. Christianity says, no, only one way, the person of Jesus Christ. If we can get that one last slide up there, where we choose to show then, I have a video for you I want you to see. But look at this slide, and the idea is we get to choose then. We choose how to face. We choose the who of the world or the who of the person of cross. We have that choice. Our perspective is we can face life and say, how do I face it? I face it through the strength and the power of God's word working through me. I work out my faith. And the reality of that truth becomes a fact of life. You have that choice this morning. You have the choice to understand that the who of the world you choose or the who of the cross. But you make the choice.